Hi there. You're listening to the Voice with Action podcast. I am your host, Deb Balico.
And I am Rebecca Pratt, co-founder and president of Orphan Relief and Rescue. Tune in to be awakened and inspired to take action towards what you were created to do in this world, to live fully alive.
Hello, and welcome to the Voice with Action podcast. I am here with Brittany, and Brittany is one of our longtime child sponsors. She sponsored Fabrice, and for 11 years, she's been a sponsor. So if you didn't get to hear Fabrice's story, he's in episode 53, and then again in 55, Rebecca shares, because Fabrice was one of our original orphans with our safe home who really inspired Rebecca to start to fight for children that were dying. And Fabrice has stayed with Orphan Relief and Rescue, and now he's our mechanic, and he's our driver, and he's a real leader on our team, and he just got married. So he wanted Mama Rebecca and Mama Brittany to come out for his wedding. And Brittany has traveled to West Africa twice with Orphan Relief and Rescue. So I thought I need to get her on this podcast to hear about her experience, and both now, most recently, but then the first time you ever went. So Brittany, what is your favorite part about traveling to West Africa with Orphan Relief and Rescue?
Yeah, so I'd say my favorite part is the total experience as a whole and what it does for my soul. Having that perspective shift, it is so, so, so different than life here in the United States. Yeah, so my everyday is just like, turn it upside down. And so what that does to kind of just reset my perspective. And coming back for the second time, it was cool to just have more familiarity and feel more grounded, because the first time is like, wow, it's hot. Wow, it's humid. Wow, it's okay. The toilet didn't quite flush right, but it's okay. And this time I was like, okay, I'm prepared. Like, it's okay. I'm prepared. I'm choosing to come back knowing like it's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. That's okay. And I think the coolest thing was just like seeing kids who had grown over the 2.5 years that just, and they remembered me, and feeling that like welcome back feeling was like, wow, that's a cool feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool, because it does feel like a family, like you're like extended family. I mean, we were just talking off camera how, you know, anyone with ORR, you know, that's a mom figure, everyone calls you mama. Like all of the kids in the safe home will call you mama. And Fabrice calls you mama. And so what was that like for you to be invited back? I mean, you intentionally were coming back on this trip because Fabrice invited you and he wanted you to be at his wedding.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, honored beyond belief that this person, this, you know, man now, it was a child, is like, wants me at his wedding in Africa. And I'm just thinking like, wow, like I couldn't have ever dreamt that I would be going to a wedding in West Africa when I'm at this point in my life. Like, it's not something you kind of plan for in your future. So just like honored to be included, and unexpectedly felt like he treated me like part of his immediate family, like part of his, like, I did not expect that. I expected to be, you know, a guest in the background. Like I'll sneak in the back, you know, and not trying to make a scene, but no, he wanted me and Rebecca wearing whites. And so that was like, okay. Like,
does that represent? Why did he want you as the moms to wear white?
Well, he said, well, you're the original brides. Like, I guess it's a not that uncommon for other women to wear white to a wedding. And that's not weird. Whereas I'm thinking, I don't want to steal attention from your bride. Like, we definitely were very hesitant at first, like, make sure that's okay with the bride. And no, they did. They're like, no, you wear white. It's an honor. And her mother was wearing white as well. And wow. Okay. We were very, I just felt honored. I mean, they had us sitting in the front row. They had like one of the only two floor fans like right on us. So I was grateful for that. Definitely honored. And then I, by choice, don't have children. It wasn't something I wanted in my life. And I'd never felt the desire to be a mother on my own, biological mother. So I just think it's fascinating for me that how did I end up here where people are calling me mom? This is so funny, but really cool.
Yeah. Is there anything specific that that kind of did for your heart or your soul, you know, in that place of honor being, you know, one of the family, being someone that, I mean, even probably realizing the impact that you made on his life, that you've been a part of his life for 11 years as his sponsor. So you would write him a letter once a year, you know, like you only kind of would communicate with him once a year. And then as he get older and he got his own phone, you know, there's space to communicate more and as he became more independent. Because I know your first trip wasn't part of the reason for your first trip was to meet him.
That was the reason. Yeah, he invited me. I go, oh, is that allowed? I didn't even know. And he sent me a screenshot of a post from Rebecca on Facebook that said, you're welcome to come on our trip, going out to anybody following ORR. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I emailed her and asked if that's okay. She said, yep, when do you want to go? And it worked out that I was able to go in April of 2023, was it, I think? Yeah, it was 2.5 years ago. And that was primarily to meet him. And what did that do for my soul? I think really, I'm not sure how to say this, but makes me want to be a better person, knowing that there's someone who is like looking up to me or seeing me as in that parental role, even though I'm really not. So, but it puts that just perspective of just like, I want to be a good example. And where can I help these other children? And so since he's aged out of the program, I've moved my sponsorship donation to another young woman there. And I got to talk to her this time and, you know, with a translator and get to know her more. And she tells me she's got this dream to write music and sing because she sings and she loves doing that. But she goes, I can't sing or I can't write songs because I can't read or write. And she's 18 years old. And I said, hold on a second. I go, you can too read and write. You just haven't learned yet. And so now I'm sitting here like, okay, this isn't over just because, you know, Fabrice is moving on to get married and move on. I'm like, I need to make sure this girl knows how to read and write and she can see her dreams come true. And how can I be an inspiration to do that? So I was like, okay, I'll commit to learning more French so that I can read and write with you. And she's got WhatsApp. So we were WhatsApp buddies now. And so I can check in with her and she committed to start learning. And we sat there while she was practicing her writing letters. And I'm just like, this is too cool. It's too cool. It's like, okay, I'm so far away, but I can still help in a little way.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it really is humbling when you realize, oh my goodness, this next generation's watching me, you know, and watching you from afar and looking up to you and observing, you know.
And I know he's praying for me. He's praying for my well-being and he's praying for my family. And I'm just thinking like, who am I, you know? So it's definitely humbling.
Yeah, it is. And a huge privilege. I agree. I mean,
to
even be loved by Fabrice, you know, to be loved by.
Yes. And to be able to go there too. Like that's the other thing that is just like, when you realize how financially disparate the two areas of the world are, and I can, while it's expensive, I can afford to go there and be there. And it's not going to hurt. It's not something I have to like save for years to go. It's like, okay, it's a very small sacrifice. There, I don't even know how somebody could possibly save up for a plane ticket to come here. So it's just like, wow.
Yeah, it is. So I know too that in your time that you were with Fabrice there for your wedding, well, how was it when you were for adult conversations, you know, where it's kind of like, you're a mom, I need your advice. You know, I'm about to get married. You weren't just there for a ceremony. Like you were there to support him on many levels.
Yeah. And just kind of be some words of wisdom and just how to treat your wife and things like that. And being that I was kind of a financial backer for him, I kind of, one of his gifts and his cards, I was like, this needs to go into a savings account. You need to be saving money. Don't just be spending money. Like, you need to save for your future and learn how to invest and just like things like that to like think about your future, because they are young and it's easy to think, oh, let's spend all the gifts we just got. I just want him to be thinking very strategically about how he's going to provide for his family and attain his goals. And I think he will. Like, something I've seen in him that's just like inspiring to me is that when he says he's going to do something and something he wants to do, then he does it. He figures out a way to do it. And even getting married, getting the dowry, graduating from mechanic school, being the driver for ORR. I'm just like, that was so cool, riding in the back seat of the van and he's driving the thing. And I'm like, look, he did it. And the staff has grown so much that there's a need for not just one driver, but two drivers. And then I learned he's trained the other driver to be a good driver. And it's just like, this is so cool. Because 2.5 years ago, I'm like, I didn't even know if that was, is there enough work for him to be a driver? Like, see, those is really important to having a successful marriage, is being a strong partner, being able to provide for each other, being able to be independent and also support each other.
Yeah, he's so resourceful and responsible and reliable. I mean, he is quite a remarkable young man, really. And it's amazing to see. So, stepping back in time, how did you originally connect with ORR 11 years ago?
I was driving home from work, or driving to work, one or the other, because that's when I would listen to talk radio, Cairo 97.3. They used to have a show with Ron and Don were the hosts. And they were interviewing Rebecca during the Ebola outbreak around that time that was spreading to the U.S. So there was a lot of interest in that. And they were interviewing her because of the OR was in that region. And the way she was just talking about how she got involved and the orphanage and then the microfinancing, just the way she was talking about it, I just felt like very interested. And then it was also in my town, Burien, at the time. And I was just compelled to look into it and looked it up. And I was like, oh, you can sponsor a child. I was like, okay, this seems like a very local and small organization that I could see and interact with. So I was like, okay, let me just sponsor a child for $35 a month and see what happens. And I was also in a moment in my life where I was like, looking for ways to just give back. And so that's how.
Yeah. Well, was there anything surprising or challenging, you could pick either, on your traveling to West Africa, either your first trip or this trip? Anything stand out that was like, ooh, that's hard?
Well, so I would say this trip, so we had the wedding, but then, you know, I also said, whatever else you want me to do, Rebecca, like, put me to work. You know, I don't like being idle hands. So, and she's like, oh yeah, we'll use you. Like, there's plenty of stuff to do. I also wanted to bring, I brought a bunch of watercolor stuff for the kids. So that was like thing I did on the side in the evenings. Definitely not a challenge. That was like just a highlight. But I would say the challenge was, so when we got there, she said, okay, the last 3 days of the trip, we're going to be doing these community meetings in these 5 villages. And we're going to do 5 meetings in 2.5 days. And the last meeting is going to be the day that we actually are packing up and going to the airport. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, and I'm going to ask you both, me and the other person there, to share your testimony. And then I'll do a more of a message sermon after that. And I'm like, okay. You know, and I just said, yep, I will do it. But inside I'm like, testimony. That's the thing that always gets me, like, where I'm just like, what's my testimony? And it's like, I always just kind of gloss by that. Like, I don't know what my testimony is. I don't know. But I said, yes. Like, I have no fear of speaking in front of people. And last time I was here, I had to like introduce myself in front of some of these communities. So I got over that fear of being, you know, white lady talking. Anyway, so that part, I didn't like that. And my first trip, I had to get over that and be like, it's okay. They want to hear what you have to say. And why are you here? Okay. This time, sharing my testimony. So in these villages that the feeding programs have been going on, microfinancing programs. They've been telling people about Jesus, and people want to know more about Jesus. And it's changing people's lives, clearly. Like this time, I was like, oh my goodness, there's so many people coming to these meetings. And anyway, so I was over that part. I'm like, okay, these people actually want to know who Jesus is. Rebecca's telling me about these chiefs that are just like, yeah, we want you to come. We want you to talk about this. One of them's even changed the name of the village. I'm like, okay. And so I'm sitting, how am I going to tell my testimony? At least, you know, so that was a challenge and something that I had like an aha moment about halfway through the first week where it's like, wait, just break this down, simplify it. Why do you believe in Jesus, Brittany? Just like tell yourself that. Like, why? Why do you? And then worry about how you tell it. But just first, and I'm sitting there just journaling in my room. Why do I believe in Jesus? And it's like, okay. Well, for one, I definitely do believe there's a overwhelming evidence of people who saw him before and after he died and rose again. Like that is indisputable how much written and visual evidence there was. So I'm like, okay, well, that's one thing. But then how do I like personally reconcile that? Like what's happened in my life? And I was like, okay, it's really because I witnessed the transformation in my parents at a young age and how that changed the dynamic within my own home and how my mom was set free from like demonic afflictions and set free from addiction. And that influenced my dad, who was then it just compelled to like confess things, old things that he'd done to my mom back in the day. And I saw a lot of that happen as a young child. And when I was really honest with myself about that, I'm like, that is my truth. Like, that is what I saw. That is how it impacted me. And it's something that I remember. And it's something that's influenced me as an adult, that it's like, even when I'm, you know, gone through stuff, whether it's I've caused it because of my own selfishness or someone else, whatever, it's like, I go back to that. It's like, forgiveness is key. Forgiveness is what brings peace again. Confessing and apologizing to get forgiveness, I have to ask for forgiveness. Like that really is the key. And that's inspired by Jesus. Like that is the truth that sets you free. And there's something that happens within. It's like, if somebody can feel loved and know that they're loved and know that they're forgiven, it makes it so much easier to forgive somebody else. It's not always easy, but it makes it easier because you know what it feels like. And so it triggers that snowball effect. That became my testimony, and I broke it down a little bit, but I realized, wow, that's like, I didn't think I had anything that would be relatable to people in their situation. But I'm like, that's totally relatable. Like, they are parents. They're all parents, and they're all struggling with things like addiction and unforgiveness and like all the basic humanity issues that are like causing you stress. But their belief system isn't built for forgiveness. It's built for cursing each other. And somebody wrongs you, you wrong them back. And I feel like it's somewhat common sense in the United States, not always, but somewhat common sense that, you know, the golden rule, right? Like I learned that in school. It wasn't in, you know, Bible school. It's like I learned that in regular school, the golden rule, do unto others. That comes from Jesus. But it's like, that's not what they know there. So anyway, so I just was like, wow, okay, I do have an example.
Yes, yes. And one that's God could use, like is really tangible for them too. A connecting point of even if your mom had demonic oppression, I mean, we see it there like I've never seen before anywhere else.
Right. And they 100% like watching people's eyes just glued to everything we're saying, everything yes. we're saying. I mean, we're talking like 500 people not moving yeah. a muscle, sitting still, just like they're totally buying it. You know? Yeah. Whereas like, here, if you talk to a crowd, they'd be like, no, but they're like, yes.
So you kind of touched on your first trip. You had to reconcile the question in your mind of, I'm a white woman coming. Why do you want to hear from me? I know that I had that same question in my own mind where I was like, I would much rather hear from you. I would much rather learn from you. You know, could you stand up and teach me? So how did you reconcile that? Because I think that's an important question, especially when people come to West Africa with us. One, how did you reconcile that? And how did you find peace in that?
Well, I think that I see it as, so they're in a state of struggle. Many of them have sold their children and they're hurting. Is it like a daily struggle for survival? And then they see the white person as like more prosperous and coming with answers or potentially solutions, or what are they bringing here? In this situation, it's these people have already experienced what the microloan program has helped them with and being able to keep their children and seeing the effects of that. And so I see there's that piece of it. And I see the piece where it's like, oh my gosh, our nation's not perfect at all. I'm not saying that at all. But there are certain things that enable prosperity. And part of that really does start at that, like, at that golden rule spot, that initial just, you can't keep tit for tat. You can't keep harming each other. Like, it starts right there. Like, you have to be able to forgive and move forward. Because if you're stuck in that mindset, it's just going to bring your whole community down. If your women are illiterate, it's going to bring your community down. If you're not able to feed your children, it's going to bring your community down. So I think of it that I thought through that. I was like, okay, there's reason to be there and share and hope that it's just about like just bringing like little tidbits of wisdom, but not trying to like change everything. Just like Rebecca says, they're not trying to change your culture, just trying to like show you that there's a different way, and it's through love and it's through forgiveness. That first step is that little spark in your heart that we attribute to Jesus. But even if people don't attribute it to Jesus, but it's almost like it becomes an infectious thing where it's like, I've got friends that don't believe in Jesus, that they're still going to forgive you and they're still going to choose love and charity over hate and cursing, right? So it's like there's still that like influence.
Yeah, but there is, I hear Rebecca talk too about, you know, they don't know what they don't know. Like all that they have known is cursing, is retaliation. That's how you have a sense of peace. Like that's a false sense of peace, but that's how they establish peace and control. And so when you come with a message of love, and love is sacrificial, love is forgiveness, love, all these aspects of love, well, we've been taught the true source of love is Jesus. And so that is the undercurrent behind everything that we do and everyone that comes, but then also our staff there, you know, they hear from our staff all the time who love Jesus and are sharing that love, that they're kind of like, well, we hear from you all the time. We want to hear from the guest who also knows that love of Jesus. And how have they discovered the love of Jesus or wrestled with, you know, surrendering or trusting Jesus with their pain and their hardship in their life? I feel like that is the connecting point, is love. And Jesus is the source of all love. So we always close out our podcast like with any kind of word of encouragement or something for anyone listening. So Brittany, I know that you have a huge heart for art, like a huge heart to create a space for people to explore art. So how would you encourage someone out there? Let's say they're stuck. We could be stuck in many different ways. How would you encourage someone to explore using art to begin to work through what they might be dealing with?
Cool question. Let's see. So one of the hardest things to do when you're starting any piece of art is just like starting, like putting the mark on paper. And you think like, oh, what's it gonna look like? What's it gonna be? Well, I think we do that in our own lives too, depending on what the struggle is you're trying to predict the future or trying to control something that might not be controllable by you because you might be dealing with other people and you can't control other people and or the environment. Like you can't control what the weather is going to do. So I think that starting with just doodling on a piece of paper can help with that. I like to just close my eyes and just start drawing something or just let it go and do. You could either think of something that your dog or your mom or whatever and draw that and keep your eyes closed, or just doodle around and then like stop and look. And it's like, wow, I think that can be sometimes profound to just close your eyes and see what happens with your pen. And there's something that affects the other side of your brain and trains that side of the brain to just like let go a little bit, let life happen and see how it unfolds. And trust God, trust yourself that you're going to get through it. Yeah, be present in the moment, enjoy the moment.
Yeah, I like that because I resonate with that because I remember one of my seasons of deepest grief in my life, all I could do was color in a coloring book. And that's like how I got through. Like I couldn't even talk about my grief. I couldn't even talk to God. Like it was so heavy. So I could really only, I felt like a child wanting to color in a coloring book. That was the only way I could kind of find release. So yeah, encouraging someone out there just to try. Just try it and use that other part of your brain and see if you'd find a moment of reprieve or release or peace.
Let go of perfection.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Especially in our culture. Let go of perfection. There we go. We're going to close out on that.
Perfect. Okay.
Well, thanks, Brittany, for joining me. And yeah, we'll get you on here again the next time you get to go.
Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to the Voice with Action podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, would you consider sharing or subscribing to this podcast and leave a 5-star review to help us grow? If you want to reach us or help us end child trafficking in West Africa, go to orphanreliefandrescue.org. That's orphanreliefandrescue.org. See you next week.